Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, where we're continuing to record during the 2020 lockdown. And a remote recording is probably just as well this week because my two guests are dialing in from two different continents, and yet they remain intrinsically linked, as they have done from the moment they set out on their path to becoming Britain's most famous sporting double act. In fact, it's hard to think of one without the other. They go hand in glove. Having met as teenagers in Nottingham with a shared passion for ice skating, their undeniable chemistry on the ice saw them skate their way into the history books with the most magical performance of Ravel's Bolero at the 1984 Sarajevo Winter Olympics, which won them gold and the highest score ever awarded in ice skating, all cheered on by 24 million Brits watching back home on the telly. More recently, they've returned to our screens with ITV's Dancing on Ice, which, all being well, will be back on our screens next January. So let's dial them up. I'm going to be calling Jane Torval here in the UK and Christopher Dean at his home in America's Colorado Springs. Thank you both for connecting with me in these weird and strange times. How are you both and where are you both?
Yeah, well, I'm out in Colorado in the US of A. And thanks for inviting us. It's great for us because Jane and I, you know, we don't get to see each other as much as we would normally now.
No.
So we're a podcast like this, although it's just sound, we can actually see each other as well.
Well, I'm in...
We can. This is great.
I'm in the UK in East Sussex, having some really warm weather today. So, yeah.
It's nice, isn't it, Jay? From where I'm sitting, it looks like you could almost be in a tropical rainforest with the backdrop that we've got behind you. Your garden is amazing.
Shit, I always say it's a screensaver, but it's real.
How have you both been in lockdown and how long have you been locked down?
Gosh, well, we finished Dancing on Ice, finished on the 9th of March. And that following weekend is when it all locked down. And so I was on an aeroplane on the Monday going home. And it seemed by the Thursday, it had all happened happening. And my partner, Karen, she was due to come a week later. But if she'd hadn't have changed her flights, she would have been stopped from traveling. So since that time, it's been sort of Groundhog Day for the last several weeks, you know, the same each day. So it's coming up with a regular routine, isn't it? It's waking up each day and saying, I'm going to do this, this, and this, although it may seem the same.
Yeah. I think everybody has their own sanity structure in terms of kind of surviving this with your physical and mental health intact. How's it been for you, Jane?
Well, I think every year when we do Dancing on Ice, Chris and I are together for like 4 or 5 months working and so on. And it's always a bit odd that suddenly he's gone back and I don't see him for a couple of months anyway in the summer. So it started off like that, but then it became the lockdown as well. So, you know, I felt even more sort of restricted and, you know, my left arm had disappeared because he was back in Colorado kind of thing. But we've obviously been keeping in touch all the time. And, you know, I have to say we're very lucky that we do have a nice garden and we've been able to get out. I have 2 children, one who turned 18 on Saturday.
Oh, what a rubbish lockdown 18.
I know. And my daughter's 14. So, you know, they've been really good. My daughter's been doing online school, like through video links. Their school's been really good for doing that to keep the routine going. My son has technically finished school now and is waiting to go to uni in September.
So a whole new life awaits him.
Yes.
Once we come out of this. Chris, your kids have grown and flown, haven't they? Because you're not sat there doing homeschooling like Jane and I.
Not in the same way, although they're a bit boomerangish that one went away and he's come back. But he's doing college online at the moment. And the other one actually has started working. So it's amazing, you know, they do eventually leave and get a job and do things.
Wow. So
just hang on to that thought.
Yeah. Tell you what, through homeschooling, I'm really holding on to that thought. Trust me. I was doing a still life of a banana earlier, creating a shadow.
Oh, dear.
How was your day?
You know what? We've, with some of our Dancing on Ice family, every Sunday we've been getting together on Zoom and doing a pub quiz. And so, and then we rotated around who sort of hosts it.
Yeah, you can imagine.
That's been a lot of fun.
You can imagine they're super competitive because some of them are skaters and everyone's a bit competitive about it. Mm-hmm. And I keep coming last.
Except for Jane.
Yes. Well, guess what? My Cardo's just arrived.
Woo! Oh!
It's Luke in the onion van. Whoa!
Chris, you have no idea how seminal a moment this is in
it
lockdown.
It is. It's so exciting.
It's like highlight of your social life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jane has been telling me that, you know, sometimes you have to wait for 2 hours just to get in line to get online.
Oh, yeah. It's much better now. It's much better now, but it was hard. That's why it became so exciting when you get a delivery.
Normally, the way this podcast would work is we would be together, there would be wine, and we punctuate 3 questions with 3 glasses of wine. It's how the best conversations happen, I find.
Obviously,
we can't do that in lockdown. So I'll kick off with your first question to you both, and I will, from my kitchen island, raise my glass to you. So first question. When I started reading back on your story, it struck me that there was this kind of almost sliding doors moment where you both discovered skating. And it was almost by accident. Chris, for you, it was a relatively new stepmother who bought you a pair of skates. Was it for Christmas?
That's right. Yeah, no, Christmas. I lived in a little village called Calverton in Nottingham. Mm. And it was only 10 miles from the city centre, but it could have been 100 miles because transport and getting there was very far and few between. And so I got the pair of ice skates when I was 10 for Christmas. And it was 2 weeks before I actually got to the skating rink to be able to get on the ice and try them out. So for that first 2 weeks, I just walked around the house at home, well, the flat at home, creating mayhem for the people downstairs. And very quickly, I realized you need these plastic guard things to put on your blades. Otherwise, you
ruin
cut
them.
Up all the linoleum all around the house. So.
And Jane, for you, it was another... Again, a sliding doors moment. You went on a school trip. Your school trip could have been to a museum. It could have been to the theatre. But it just so happened that it was the ice rink.
Yeah, I mean, it was just the teacher that was, she was our teacher for the class, said, who would like to go ice skating? Because I'm going to try and organise a trip. And so I got permission because I begged my parents. I said, oh, please can I go? And it was... It was just such an exciting thing to do, to go into the city anyway. But when, as soon as I got onto the ice, I was watching people that could actually do it. And I was just trying to take it all in. I was like a sponge because I really wanted to be better than I was. And I was okay. I wasn't like falling around. I had a sense of balance, but I just saw some really good skaters. I thought, I want to be like that.
But isn't it amazing for you both that those two moments went on to change everything? And I guess my first question to you both is, are there other moments in your life where fate has intervened and taken you forward in life in a way that you'd never anticipated?
I think there's been lots, really, haven't there? Quite a few.
Yeah, I have to say the biggest moment has to be, I suppose, that the fact that the two of us wanted to go ice skating.
Yeah.
And at some point, those, as you say, those sliding doors, we ended up facing each other at some point and making a decision, shall we skate together? You know, equally, it could have been no.
Well, I started skating with Michael, he was called, when I was about 14, I think. Or maybe a bit younger.
You were younger than that because you were national champion when you were 13. So she doesn't know either.
So me and Michael were pair champions. He was older than me. He was probably about 17 and I was 14. And then we were chosen to represent Great Britain in the European Championships. But then not long after that, the partnership finished. And
He wanted to go to London.
Yeah, and I was very good friends with Chris's partner.
Sandra.
And she pretty much did the same thing. She went off to London.
Went down to the big smoke, didn't they?
And so we were both without partners then. And after a few months, Chris's coach said, you know, we need to find you a partner. And she thought I would be a good partner.
Again, it's another one of those sliding door moments.
Yeah.
Circumstances happened that brought us together. And then our coach at the time, that put us together after a short period of time, she finished. And then we directed ourselves to another coach that then she directed us to other people within her circle that just led to these moments. Yeah. I think everybody's life is about sliding doors. Yeah. But it's sometimes, you know, where those sliding doors take you and how you can utilize it to its best at the time. And so, you know, from our point of view, when we started skating as kids at the rink, there was very little practice time. And so early on, we trained ourselves to utilize the small amounts of time as efficiently as we could. And then as we got better and we were able to afford to go away to Germany to train, that training early on allowed us to be as intense over a longer period of time. So I think
using every minute we had.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, in terms of the hours that you put in, before you turned professional, Chris, you were working as a policeman. And Jane, were you working in a call centre?
No, I was working in an insurance office.
Right.
The Norwich Union.
It's the Norwich Union. And I don't know what it's called now. It's called something else, but yeah.
Aviva, isn't it?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh. So you both had regular jobs, but you were still skating furiously. So in order to work around Chris's shift, sometimes you'd have to skate through the night to get your practice in.
I would have been on afternoons, so I'd have gone from 2 till 10 on the streets. Jane would have finished at 5 o'clock, so she'd have to stay awake, and then I'd go straight from the police station to the ice rink, still in, you know, uniform minus the hat. And we'd get changed there. And then we'd do, you know, a 3 or 4 hour session, then do the ice, go home. I would go to bed because I wouldn't have to work until 2 o'clock, but Jane would have to be at work at 8 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. So the shift system really was
really
difficult to work around. Yeah. Yeah.
And how long did you do that for?
3-4 years, like that.
Wow.
I know it sounds a bit cliche, but we both come from very working class families. My dad for his whole life was a miner, and he'd been underground for I don't know how many years, but yeah, he worked up until the last few months of his life, but he worked 7 days a week. I mean, he actually liked going to work. I don't know whether that says anything, but he did work 7 days a week, And it was just that work ethic. And, you know, I left school at 15 and a half to become a police cadet. So I had 2 weeks off from school to going to work. And so there's always been that in our background. And I find it hard now to actually not do something, you know, on these down times. So they're difficult periods for me because I always feel like I should be productive in some way.
And then when you put sport around that and the sense of competition and the amount of dedicated hours that you put into that, does that ever leave you? Are you better at downtime, Jane, than Chris?
I think I am because Chris...
She is.
Yeah. if we're working on something and then it comes to the end of the day and we maybe go have dinner together or something, he still is still going over in his head. And once I've left the workplace, the ice rink, I don't want to talk about it. So I want to just focus when I'm there, I want to focus on that, but I don't necessarily want to continue talking about it for the rest of the day. I mean, sometimes you have
I think that's now. I mean, when we were younger,
yeah,
our life as amateurs and getting ready for the Olympics and everything, your day revolved around practice,
yeah.
Getting costumes ready, getting music cut, listening to music. Again, on the ice, off the ice, rehearsals. So it was those periods were all day. I think now, certainly, you know, with Dancing on Ice, I think, you know, you go into that period of time, but then you like to cut off.
Yeah.
I'm different. I'm still choreographing or thinking or working or doing something, but that's the way I'm wired, I think.
That's probably why we work together. That's why it works together for us.
Yeah, Jane will just give me eye rolls.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Well, this really takes me beautifully on to my second question. You're Torvald and Dean, you're bread and butter, you're gin and tonic, Anton Deck. You are so intrinsically linked that it must almost be like you have two identities. You are yourselves, but ultimately you are as one. Would that be fair? Would that be a fair summation? And yeah. I wondered what it's like to live with an identity that's not entirely your own.
I mean, we knew each other from the ages of 9 and 10, and you know, we're getting up there now, and so the majority of our
life, 20 years, right, Chris?
Yeah,
something like that. That's Jane's stock answer. Yeah. About 20 years. Yeah. I think we've always identified ourselves as Torvald and Dean and Jane and Chris, as our, we're such close friends.
Yeah, I mean, we grew up each other all through our teens. And, you know, that's a difficult time for a lot of people. And we are both like only children. So we got that sense of looking after each other quite early on. Chris looks after me more than I look after him.
She needs a bit more caring these days. Come on, dear, this way.
If only he was closer, you could punch him down.
But yes, we've just, you know, we've had this extraordinary bond in that we both had the passion for the skating and the competition. But at the same time, we always looked out for each other as brother and sister, if you like. But it's kind of more than that, because what we've achieved together is very special to both of us.
The only parallels I can draw would be conversations I've had over the years with Ant and Dec, who had a very similar route with their friendship. They met at not a dissimilar age to you two. They are known as one. Of course, they're individuals, as are you both. But you kind of, you have a responsibility to one another that is unspoken. And yet there must be times where, certainly after you retired from professional skating, you step back for a bit, you then have to go and re-identify who you are, and then you come back together again. And that happens almost on a yearly basis now with Dancing on Ice. Like, how do you do that? How do you slide in and out of those different hats that you wear?
It's easy.
I don't think it, I'm going to say it doesn't feel that hard because it's and also in what we've done, skating, choreography, physical movement, there is that sort of connection through physicality as well as mentally as well. And so I think, you know, from a work point of view, we know how each other moves. We have a dialogue that we can speak to each other very quickly and get right back to where we were. I mean, obviously things might happen in that, you know, period of time that we're away, but we talk to each other, you know, almost every day or every other day. We don't have a disconnect whereby, oh, what have you been doing for the last 4 or 5 months? It's not that. I know what Jane was doing yesterday, you know.
That's an extraordinary friendship, isn't it?
It was funny. There was a funny moment. I don't know whether it was not this year, or maybe it was this year. Chris had come over for a few days, like in the summer, and it was mainly, we were meeting with the stylist and going through outfits ready for the upcoming Dancing on Ice. And Chris had arrived maybe a couple of days before, but I hadn't actually physically seen him. So I walk into this room, and we knew that we were going straight from this meeting to have dinner with our producers. So I walked in, and because of, I'd had to walk away, I got these flat shoes on. I had a dress on, but flat shoes that didn't really go with the dress. So I walk into this room, and the first thing Chris does goes, and then he looks straight.
Looks at your feet.
Yeah. And he said, I said, hi. I said, don't worry, I'm not wearing those tonight. Because I knew exactly what he was thinking. Do you remember?
There's an unspoken dialogue.
I said, I've got other shoes in my bag. Don't worry.
I don't know if you can appreciate how extraordinary a connection and a friendship and a relationship you two have compared to most folk, I guess.
I guess you don't because you're in it and it's what you're, we've always been used to, really.
Do you not think that there is a point at which a lot of married couples could learn from you two?
Oh, absolutely. We always say that the reason we've been together so long and been such good friends is because we're not married. It's much better that way.
Yeah. You know how married couples say, don't take an argument to bed. Well, we don't take an argument off the ice. If we have a dispute, we resolve it. And we always leave the ice, you know, friends.
We don't really argue that much anymore anyway. But when we used to, we used to say, we said early on, like, you know, whilst we're arguing, because you do have moments where you disagree with things, and it's usually a technical thing to do with a step or something, but we decided early on, like, whilst we're arguing, our competitors are practicing, so stop arguing. Get on with it.
See, that's a really intelligent workaround to any dispute. And you're right. That's seriously, you should think about relationship counselling, like offering it for other people.
There you go. Maybe that'll be it.
Yeah. Do you miss each other when you're not together?
Yeah, I mean, I always have this moment when after Dancing on Ice, and I think Chris said that, you know, suddenly we separate and we've been together for so long. And I think, you know, we're used to having the downtime straight away after Dancing on Ice. But I think it's just been a bit more strange with the lockdown and everything. And I don't know when it first happened. I didn't know when I'd get to physically see Chris because, you know, even now the flights are all a bit weird, aren't they? And normally Chris would come over, you would come over maybe July, you were planning to come over and we'd have meetings leading up to the new series and so on. But obviously now they're all...
Yeah, Zoom calls all the way.
Mm.
Sorry, Chris.
There is that, you know, we're intensely together these days and then it's that separation. But I think we, because of Dancing on Ice, we know that it's going to happen next year. It's going to happen next year. And so...
But what about those years when it wasn't on? Because there was a big gap for a while, wasn't there?
They were big years, yeah. For me, personally, it was a harder time.
It was harder because we didn't know what was next. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Jane was trying for a family. I was just newly married, got a new house here in America. So it was a whole new ball game. But then when Dancing on Ice came around, I mean, that was just like a whole new lease of life for Torvald and Dean, you might say, for us.
And Jane, what was your experience of those years?
Busy in other ways, like we were trying to start a family. And then when my son was two, we got the call about doing Dancing on Ice. And, you know, I was like hands-on, full-on mum, was never going to have any help. But yet at the same time, I was drawn to this new project of Dancing on Ice. And I thought, and that when we were both asked about it, how are we going to teach these celebrities to skate? And we were like, oh, it never work. But then we started thinking about it a bit more, and I got quite excited because it was a different thing. It was we'd always toured as professional skaters. We'd done our own shows and toured the world, but this was a different thing. Working in television in the studio was completely different for us. You know, it was all happening and all exciting and all new and different, and we didn't know how well it would go. You know, in our minds, it was one series. It was just going to happen once. I don't think we could think beyond that. And then, you know, they were so pleased with it from the very first show of the first series. You know, it got amazing figures, viewing figures. And then it just got better and better for that whole series. And they realized they'd already decided they were going to do it the next year, so, and the year after, and it continues now. So
how many years in are you now?
We've just done 13, haven't we? Because there was a 3-year gap.
12 or 13, yeah.
And then all being well, there will be series 14 come January.
Yes.
Depending on the health state of the world.
I think, you know, it's all new protocols, ways of working that I think all TV productions and film productions are now engaged in making it work. And so, and it has to work. I mean, TV has to make TV.
Yeah.
And so there has to be a workaround in whatever form it is, but it will happen.
I think absolutely. Also with Dancing on Ice, it goes on air in January. We've just got that extra time than some of the other big programs have to figure it out, and our producers can learn from how other programs are managing to do it or work or what's not working. I think we've got that advantage with Dancing on Ice.
All eyes are on Strictly.
Yes.
How are they
going
to do it? Yeah, I mean, they will obviously be the forerunners. Yeah.
And these are conversations that, you know, people like us who work in this industry, we're having all the time. How do you do this? You know, shows need an audience. Otherwise, it's just people on a stage or people on an ice rink.
Yeah.
You want that atmosphere. It's really hard, isn't it? And we all have to figure out a way to do it well and safely.
Safely, yeah. And I think we will. And I think science is going to bring this along as well, you know, whether it's through vaccines or treatments that we'll all get back to some sort of place that we're comfortable with. I don't think we'll ever go back to not knowing about this now. I think it's all in our psyche forever. And it's made us view things differently.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? When you consider it's only been 6 months, and yet it feels like it's stamped on our brains indelibly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I've... I obviously, I'm going to remember it, but a generation of children are going to remember it too.
Yeah, because they're old
until
enough.
They get older as well. Yeah, yeah.
On an earlier edition of this podcast, Roman Kemp summed it up beautifully. He said, "I feel like I'm living in a GCSE question from 20 years' time."
There's every chance that there will be questions about it. Yeah, yeah. Where were you? What were you doing then?
Exactly.
It's one of those moments, isn't it? Yeah.
It really is. Yeah. It really is. Okay, time for your final question. I wanted to know about the moment that you consider so magical that you would have to relive time and time again, and then subsequently a tragic moment that you could delete it forever, be it from your mind, your history, or even the World Wide Web.
Obviously, my magic moment is the Olympics and Bolero.
Same.
Because we worked a life to that point. And we didn't know what was after that. Mm. So in retrospect, I would like to go back and look at that moment. I mean, I can see it on video, or I think it's 16mm film these days, but I could look back on video and I can see it in its 2D form. But if I had the chance of immersing myself into that space again, then, you know, I think they say to people that are getting married, take it in on that day, because generally that's going to be one of your highlights of your life. And for us, that was our day. Mm. And to be able to go back, and because we were so focused, so in the zone, and so you didn't have necessarily the opportunity to take in
the audience and
what was happening around you and everything. Yeah.
No, so peripheral vision, just intensely focused. You can watch that moment back time and time again, and you've reenacted it. I mean, I think you've skated that dance over 2,000 times now.
A lot of times, yeah.
Yeah. But is it more about going back to that moment and feeling it again, actually tuning into rather than being so focused on what you're skating, actually feeling that moment?
We did have the chance about, how many years ago was it? 5 years ago. It was the 30th anniversary of the Olympics.
Of us winning.
And we went back. Of winning, and we went back to Sarajevo. We went back to the venue, which had been bombed during the war, but they rebuilt it. And this was sort of a launch of reopening it. And the city of Sarajevo asked us to go back. And in actual fact, going back, I've seen things for the first time that I didn't remember. Mm. But then actually getting into the building and meeting some of the people, one of the real fascinating things was that one of the people that were looking after us, she was 36, but she had been the flower girl on the day that went to pick up flowers just before we skated.
Yeah, you see,
and 36 years later,
what's going on when you see the footage going on to the ice. I don't know how many of them there were, but she was one of those girls, and she came to meet us personally when we went back. Oh. It was so sweet.
And Jane, for you straight away, when I asked about a magic moment, you just went, yep, same. There was no...
Yeah, it's the same thing.
So it's not about the day that you became a mother or for you, Chris, the day you became a father. It's about those 4 minutes, 28 seconds, which technically you could only have your blades on the ice for 4 minutes. So you even had to choreograph this incredibly beautiful moment at the top of the routine where you had to keep your blades off the ice, didn't you?
Correct. Yeah, that really led to that opening position, those iconic pictures that were taken of the time that people, you know, obviously refer back to. And whenever they do that, it's that moment. But out of necessity, that's where that came from.
Yeah,
it's amazing, isn't it? And Jane, do you share that sentiment with Chris about those 4 minutes? Is that what you'd like to go back and re-experience again?
Yeah, I mean, you can't change anything. When you watch it, you can't change anything. And we wouldn't want to. But yeah, like Chris said, it would be nice to remember a bit more about the atmosphere and what was going on. And but it was the moment that, as Chris said, we didn't know what we were going to do in the future. And mostly competitors would turn professional straight after their last major competition and do an ice show for a couple of years. And that was that. But we never envisaged that we would still be doing it this long. So we're so grateful each time, you know, even through the aches and pains, we're so grateful that we can still do it in some way. So,
do you see how we keep avoiding numbers so people can't do the math?
The Olympics was 84. They were 25. Leave it there.
Well, okay. Well,
And what you've done for the sport is incredible. I mean, we didn't live anywhere near an ice rink as a kid. But I remember in 1984, I was still at school and I was out on my roller boots. And I know it was screened in the afternoon in the UK, wasn't it?
I can't. Probably. I don't know. The Olympics.
I remember being called in because you were about to take to the ice. And everybody, all the kids on the estate had to go in.
Oh, really?
All the kids on the estate got to go in because Torval and Dina were about to win gold.
Aww.
It was like, it was a given. It's extraordinary.
And that's the pressure that we heard of everybody saying, well, it's not a question of will you win, but how much will you win by? Mm. And so we would always, you know, put our fingers in our ears and go, la, 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 because we didn't want to hear that sentiment at all from our point of view. Well, we just didn't want to have
distraction
that,
or pressure.
Distraction or pressure of that it's not a given, that in actual fact every day you still got to work for it, even though at the moment you're the best, but
you're one, you know, fall
in
away
a minute's
from
time,
it
you might not, yeah, you one fall, one slip,
which
away
takes
from
us to your tragic
obscurity.
Moments. Are there moments that exist that, I mean, when I say tragic, I don't mean, you know, the worst of times. There was a wrap it in some comedy maybe to soften the tragedy, but is there a moment that you would gladly just erase from public gaze? Certainly.
Well, I think one for me was well, both of us, but when we were training 1983 for the Europeans, and we had a really bad fall and I fractured my shoulder blade, so we had to miss the Europeans. And, you know, we're on a roll because we're already twice world champions. This is a season before the Olympics and you've got to stay up there to keep having a chance to be the best and keep pushing yourself. And there's loads of people waiting to jump into your spot. And for us to miss a major championship, we'd never had to do that before. And it was just, we couldn't even bear to watch it on the television. We stayed in Germany where I was getting treatment. We couldn't bear to watch it, could we? And we just trained and trained.
Even Chris's face now, he looks like he's contorted by the memory. I wish you could see everybody listening.
But I think that's also gave us some character of coming back from that as well.
Yeah.
And the determination, because I think mentally you can will yourself to get better quicker. I mean, that's a bit Zen-ish, I know, I understand all of that. But I think there are some positive things that if you feel that you need to get better, to prove yourself, you can will that, whether it's determination. But if there's this like, oh, well, it's past, it's gone, we'll sit back and we'll wait a year, that's a different mindset. And for us, that was never the case. We were going to come back. So we actually had to
better,
come back, I
stronger.
Think, stronger and better than we had if we'd have gone to those championships, potentially won them and then gone on to the world championships. There was a 6-week difference.
Yeah.
And so we had those 6 weeks to get ourselves up to the level that we felt, but we worked even harder
to
get even stronger. And that was that Barnum period when we worked with Michael Crawford and all of that period. So, you know, like I say, I think these are character moments that it actually you can
learn
from as well.
I think one that I would like to delete is when my My dress came down New York. We were in Madison Square.
Madison Square Gardens. This is a funny story. And we were doing somewhat of a serious number.
No, we were guesting I'm thinking of Fred and Ginger. We were guesting with Ice Capade.
No, it wasn't Fred and Ginger.
No, that's when the whole Tonette came undone and it came down. You're thinking of the other one. I know what you're thinking of, but...
Eleanor
Rigby.
Well,
maybe my boobs
flashed.
Come out twice at Madison Square
and you didn't know it, but a friend of ours was taking pictures and she totally caught.
It was flashing. This moment. But the other one that I feel was more serious was that I had a halter neck dress, like a la Fred and Ginger. And near the beginning of the routine, I did something where Chris's hand was on the neck. And it hadn't been
costume
fastened
failure.
That well. It should have had a better fasten. And it suddenly started to fall down. And that was the only thing that was keeping. So I was dancing like that. I kept doing that. And then.
I wasn't the Tom Cruise night as
I
well.
I can't remember. It? No. At one point, it did come down. And because the choreography was all going to pieces, it was all messed up. And then Chris was furious. I was in tears. Chris was furious. He went into the wardrobe lady and had a big go at them and telling them that they needed to sort the costume out. But that was a moment where you just don't know where to hide because it's there.
Oh, Jane, at the moment you said halter neck, I started to panic for you. Did you have anything on underneath
the costume? No, because the bra cups were in their costume. But what made it worse was the halter neck and all around the top bit was all beaded. So it was heavy. So as soon as it came undone, it was boof. And it was awful trying to dance like that, trying to hold it up.
Jab handing one at a time to keep one boob in.
Yeah.
And it was Tom Cruise in the audience?
No, that was a different time. That was in Toronto.
Well, it was still in
Toronto.
Was it Toronto? Not Madison Square.
No, Toronto.
Oh, okay. Because you mentioned it was during A Fred and Ginger. And we were doing a Fred and Ginger number and he came backstage with a friend and all the girls in the cast, her ginger girls, she was in the center of the line and she got edged right up to the end as they were taking a picture.
The routine was like, we were Fred and Ginger and then there was several of the other girls were different gingers. That was kind of the story. And
I had to find
the
right
something
ginger.
Like that. He found me, so that was all good. But they all said, "Oh, can we come and have a picture with you? Can we come?" They're all excited, and I said, "Yeah, sure." But they gradually cut next. I was at the end of the line, and this picture
got pushed out.
Edged out, yes.
And they're taller than me.
I am ginger. Yeah. What's going on here? Oh, Jane, I really feel for you in those moments because there's. That wardrobe malfunction, we've all been there. Yeah. Keeps you awake at night, that kind of thing. But it could always be worse. You think, I'm thinking about how it could be worse, but it could.
We did have one boy on one of our shows, and funnily enough, his name was John Thomas. And it was an opening night, and he was doing a very serious Mahler number, which was like 5 minutes long and it's all slow and sort of somewhat tragic. And within the first 30 seconds, his pants split from waistband to waistband.
Oh!
And obviously, you know, he's a dancer, so he wears just a dance belt. And so for the rest of the 5 minutes, the audience
They were giggling because we were in Australia, so they didn't care. Yeah. They started.
They could see everything.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. Yeah, all his bits were up, but he carried on.
You don't
he
wear
wasn't
pants.
Gonna
the
stop.
Pants are sewn in on this.
Well, he had a dance belt on.
A dance belt is literally like a thong.
It's a thong. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I feel for you. But this is a perilous game, isn't it?
Yeah,
ice skating. The
show has to go on.
It really does. When do you think that you two will be back in the same room together again? What's the plan?
Maybe
fingers
September?
Crossed, August, yeah. September. Yeah, hopefully. That's when the next plan is. We're looking forward to that. Fingers crossed. Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to see you back on the ice. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're looking forward to getting back.
It'd be nice to see you.
And Dancing on Ice, actually, are putting together some sort of shows to encapsulate what Dancing in Ice has all been about. So I'm looking forward to seeing those on the TV.
When are those coming out? Is that something that's coming?
We're not sure yet. Hopefully, you know, closer to when the show goes out, but not sure. But it's
so many great moments.
I just watched something, you know, a snippet of it.
You forget what all the stuff that happened. Just made me smile.
Yeah. Like, you know, Todd Carty.
Mm-hmm.
Classic moments.
The thing that I feel most sorry about for Todd is, you know, I grew up, as did you, watching Todd probably on things like Grange Hill. Mm-hmm. And then he has all those years in EastEnders. But the one thing, anytime anyone says Todd Carty, you just think of him flailing on the ice.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
It's kind of defined how you think of him.
I think he's okay with it, though.
I think he's more than okay with it. And then, of course, the spectacular Gemma Collins moment. There are just so many.
Yes.
We've had, you know, I don't think people realise how precarious it can be until you see all of these moments put together.
And then you get somebody like Perry who comes along and you think, Perry's a shoo-in, Perry's a shoo-in. And Joe wins.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? Yeah. And I'm sure Joe will forgive me for saying that, but, you know, you just can't call a show like that sometimes.
No, the audience have their say, that's for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And that, you know, and we give them that power and they use it well.
Yep.
Well, for however long we are left locked down, look after yourself.
Yes, you too.
Thank you so much.
And Chris, safe journey back to the UK when you finally make it. And Jane, enjoy that beautiful garden behind you.
Thank you.
White Wine Question Time is produced by me, Kate Thornton, and Caitlin Mercer for Yahoo UK, and edited by Callum Goddard-Mucklow. Music is by Andy Bell, whose back catalogue and new material is available on iTunes and Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at WhiteWineQT. Just tell your in-home smart speaker, OK Google or Alexa, followed by the instruction, take me to White Wine Question Time. And remember, before I leave you, wash your hands, stay safe, and always drink responsibly. I'll see you next time.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.